Welcome to Belonging and Beyond podcast for immigrant and refugee women, where we'll be having deep conversations about belonging, spirituality, and healing.
So today my guest is Deb, who is an amazing person and somebody who I've got to know by going to her coffee shop, a local coffee shop called Patch. And we just got to know each other and shared one another's stories. And I discovered also that Deb is a former refugee. So I was wondering if you could just share a little bit of your immigrant story and under what circumstances you kind of had to leave your homeland.
Of course. First of all, thanks for having me. And it's been a fun journey getting to know each other's stories and seeing, I think, a lot of the, while different countries, maybe different wars, different times, but the cool thing, I think, is to find the commonalities. You know, I think in our stories and as so many others who have experienced being a refugee or as an immigrant. So I'm excited to share that today. So for me, I was born in Vietnam in one of the most controversial wars, I think, probably in our lifetime so far. And so my dad's American, my mom's Vietnamese. And so I was born there. And very much under the, you know, Vietnamese culture and whatnot. Vietnamese was my first language. But then as an early age also learned, you know, English because of the business my parents owned. So they owned a big, a restaurant, a casino. It was very successful. And ironically, they built that up during the midst of war. And I think part of that is because I don't think that people thought it was going to end the way history tells us that the Vietnam War ended. Mm. So, you know, I think that life, despite the bombs and the threats and, communism going on all around us, they were continuing to build their life, building a future ahead. Mm. Kind of in, you know, my mom's homeland and in a land that my dad came over, and fell in love with, and fell in love with the people and the country and I think the opportunities. So, As the war progressed and as the communism started moving down from the north, as it got closer, to where we were in South Vietnam, there were reporters that were reporting the war. They would come in to the restaurant and tell, you know, my family, it's moving down here, and especially my mother being somebody who was associated with an American, who was, you know, affluent, if you will, during that time. That she basically would be targeted. And so she needs to get out. Mm. So she said, this is my country. I'm not going to leave, you know, and she stay and hold her ground. Mm. So, on a last minute's notice, as things started to really escalate, my dad came home and said, gotta go. And so basically there was an arrangement that was made because they were emptying all the Americans, anybody out, anybody that was doing any type of non-government work, and everybody, volunteers, Red Cross. And so it was the last flights that were out. So he made arrangements for a friend of his who was a pilot and said that he would take care of Robbie, who was the pilot, his wife and his daughter, to make sure that to help get them out if he would get my mom, myself, and my little sister out. So I was 7 at the time and my little sister was 1. Mm. So it was a very rapid departure. So we had to go in the car. And, you know, for my mom, I think back, I appreciate that more now being older, that in that moment of sitting in the car, and I remember it very vividly, and looking at all of our family and all the people that worked for them and whatnot, just tears and this, it makes me get emotional thinking about it. It's just almost this ripping apart of your people and let alone not knowing what was going to happen to your country and everything that you had. So basically leaving with, you know, the shirt on your back and just very little possessions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was the departure time, but, Did I lose you?
No, I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, I'm still here. Yeah. Thank you for sharing the story. I can definitely relate about the sudden departure that usually happens when people become refugees. It's almost like a label that is put on the experience, but, right?
Yeah.
But basically, it's just people fleeing for their lives, you know, mm-hmm. trying to survive. And so, yeah. And so what shaped you, you know, as you were growing up, as you were maturing, like what shaped you? What experiences maybe was?
Oh gosh, there's so many. Yeah. I think that definitely that experience, I think being born now living in the United States and living in this culture, the fact of being born in another country and under another culture, is such a rich gift, you know, that I cherish. And there was a time coming over, and we can talk more about that later, is where I really was trying to hide my identity, and being afraid and ashamed of it, and making sure that I don't have any type of a foreign accent and, you know, and whatnot. But, now, man, I embrace it, you know, that, I just, even with my three daughters, at a very early age, I wanted them exposed to other cultures, other countries, other language, other foods, because I think we are all so interconnected, and I just don't want to be siloed, you know, into what I know, even now, even the things that matter to me now, you know, points of view and whatnot. So I think there's that, and then also work ethics. And that, you can lose everything, but you also can rebuild. You know, it takes a lot of work, and being very resilient, but I think it's important to rise back up. And, I think also that you just hold on to things in this world pretty, you know, you don't have to hold on to things so tightly. You know, there's things that are dear and near to you, and especially external things. But I think that things can happen in a moment's notice. You know, empires have risen and fallen. Presidencies have risen and fallen. You know, military regimes have risen and fallen. Countries have risen and fallen. But I think the one thing that as an individual, whether you're living in the midst of all of that, or if you're under that rule or that control, I still think that within each individual, we can rise, we can fall, and we can rise. You know, despite our circumstances, and you may not have control over who is ruling the country. You may not have control over finances always, but I think that you do have control over your choices. And I think that, it is so important to never lose hope. You know, I think having that hope and a sense of dignity, of who you are and how you were, designed and shaped, if you will. I think that even in your darkest days, if you have a little bit of that little flicker, you know, could sustain you and carry you through as you find bigger light again.
Beautiful. Yeah. Beautifully expressed, and I could sense and feel how much you learned on this journey, and you know how the experiences shaped you, and how you're also, especially your mom. I know you spoke of her and shared a little bit about, you know, who she was and how her experiences also and gifts were passed on to you as well, you know, as far as resilience and holding on to hope and kind of never giving up, really. So it's really, really amazing. And I also am curious to hear from you, what were some of the biggest challenges that you experienced, and what were some of the ways you tried to not necessarily resolve them, but handle them? Because I don't think we necessarily have the capacity to immediately resolve all of our challenges. Like sometimes it takes a lifetime, I believe, to walk the path and really integrate some of the experiences and heal ourselves and do the inner work we need to do. So I'm just curious, what has been your take on that?
The challenges.
Yeah, some of the biggest challenges.
Yeah, I think early on, as a little girl, the challenges were trying to sort out my identity. And I think that there's a, it's a different challenge. The different challenges, I think that if you are of one ethnicity, I guess, you know, one nationality, but here I was, you know, I had an American father and a Vietnamese mother. And while leaving Vietnam, I felt very at home, felt like I really belonged there because that's what I knew, right? But also I was surrounded, there was a lot of American culture and Western influence too. So I was introduced to that. But coming over, kind of felt like, well, I'm American, sort of, maybe, you know, but I'm also Vietnamese. And so was I an American that belonged here in this land? Or was I a displaced Vietnamese little girl that came over, right? And our path wasn't direct either. I mean, we left from Vietnam, went to Thailand, and from Thailand was basically waiting to see what was, you know, what was going to happen with the hopes of returning. And, of course that is not the case. And we went on to France because my mom had dual citizenship. So, I mean, this all happened, you know, 7 years old. I was living in all of these countries and we kept trying to find a place to belong. And so we went to Germany. And so in each place, I learned the language, you know, made friends, but then had to, really, you know, had to be torn away from that too. So, and I think that's a challenge. And then, coming over to the States and then trying to find a place there. And as I mentioned, I think that, my mom and dad ended up not staying together. Mm-hmm. And so I'd go back and forth and I felt like my dad, well, he never outwardly said it, but I felt like I was ashamed of my language. So I, you know, just stopped speaking Vietnamese. I started speaking English to my mom in an effort, I think, to try to fit in with school and trying to find my place. If that's one thing, if I could go back to my younger self, that I would say, hold on to that, you know, and so I could still speak and learn it now, but, I wish I had the fortitude and the security and not so much of the confusion, I think, to hold on to that then. And I think, throughout this journey, I ended up going to 26 schools by the time I graduated high school. Mm-hmm. So I learned very, very quickly from that moment of the rapid departure from, Vietnam to Thailand, to France, to Germany, and then coming over, that I learned how to make friends very, very quickly. But yet never felt like I belonged. I also had to learn to say goodbye very well too. So, and I think that that is something that still stays with me, you know, being somebody I think that really values relationship and deep, like, connectivity. And there's probably still that, you know, little me in there that's, oh, is something going to happen? Something that, you know, whether I lose somebody to a sickness or lose somebody to circumstances or falling out or whatnot. There's still, while it's gotten a lot better, there's still a little bit of that quiet hum, I think, that sits within me. But the beauty of that is, like I said, is having to learn how to build relationships and learn to adapt to your environment. And going back to your question of one of the challenges was having to adapt and adjust and get the lay of the land, very, very quickly at a very young age. I mean, basically you just come in and you're just scanning the room, scanning, you know, the neighborhood, scanning the country, scanning the people. And I think that's a lot. That's a lot to take on as a kid, you know? But I think that all those things that, I now see as gifts and how, I go about the world is I can basically really scan and get a feel for the energy of the place, the people, have some very deep discernment, into people and where they're at, and really, being able to meet people where they're at and seeing those points of pain and that probably I experienced in those times, and saying, you know what, I'm going to get up and go across the room to that person who's sitting there by themselves. And I think the other thing too is, some of those friendships and relationships that I've had to leave have circled back. And I think that that's the, one of the upsides of social media and the ability to really connect with people now is to reconnect with some of those friendships, you know, and even my eighth grade teacher, my eighth grade English teacher, you know, I still keep in touch with her because she was somebody that really impacted my life in a very vulnerable time as a 12, 13-year-old. So the challenges have become now my strengths and my tools.
Beautiful. Yeah, I can sense the resilience in that, and how it was really kind of intention. There's like almost like an intentional sense to overcoming the challenges and really making the best of them, rather than kind of allowing yourself to dwell in these kind of like, I don't want to necessarily say negative experiences, because every negative experience has a gem inside of it. And it sounds like you've been able to really find those gems within the challenges. So really amazing. And I just want to also, it's interesting you mentioned that, because of the shame, you felt like you didn't want to speak Vietnamese language anymore, like you felt like you needed to hide that. I was the opposite. I felt like I did not want to speak English because in yes, I felt like I was betraying my own cultural roots. And I think it's also something about the Cold War growing up during those times influenced the way I was perceiving the United States and America in general. And that was a former enemy. There wasn't really much trust there. And so I feel like I took that on, and I would speak English only when I had to. So that was kind of like,
interesting. Yeah, I've not heard people be open about that. And I think, I'm sure there's a lot of people that probably could relate to that.
And I also, speaking about, you know, leaving friends behind, that was definitely one of the experiences I had as well. And I actually remember that I, when I came to the U.S., I was writing letters for at least a couple of years to some of the, one of my best friends actually that I left behind in Russia. And I feel like having that kind of continuity in a relationship, and not necessarily just kind of like leaving everything behind and saying, I'm never going back, I'm never going to, you know, see these people again, just feels healthy to me. Unless there is, you know, I do also believe some relationships are not meant to last. And, you know, we do need to go our separate ways. But I think for children and teenagers, you know, people when we move, it's important to have these kind of secure attachments that allow us to continue to develop and be who we are, and have like almost like have some like a part of the past still be with us as we are moving to new territories. Otherwise everything is new, and then it's like you said, it's difficult to really swim in those, it can be difficult to swim in those new environments if we don't have an anchor almost like inside of us. So.
I think you touched on something there with the having that history and somebody that knows that about you. And you know, I know for me, for instance, and I think that this has had more impact on me than I realized, and it's just been of recent, I think, this illumination in this. For instance, like, I don't know that I have a birth certificate. And so when people ask me, you know, hey, do you know what time you were born? I don't. You know, I don't know. And for, you know, early on, I don't know that that really mattered. You know, what was my name, you know, cause my mom didn't take on my dad's last name. And so I had, you know, her last name to my dad's last name. It kind of just changed. And so it was a little bit murky in that. And then, you know, my childhood friends are from Vietnam. I have no idea who they are, you know, also my one of my brothers, you know, tragically died in Vietnam. He had come over. He's from my dad's first marriage, came over to the States. And I got really close to him. So, I mean, I looked up to him, and he was kind of my safeguard, too. And would, you know, when we would do things or kind of get in trouble together or do anything, we'd venture out. He'd always looked after me. You know? So I think, you know, losing, having that loss in that way and somebody that knew you. And, you know, my other brothers is still here, and we'll reminisce and we'll talk about some of our days in Vietnam. So I miss that. I wish I had more of that, and that people that shared the same experience. But I think with the 26 schools of, it's been really healing for some of my friends that I've been able to reconnect with. Like one of my best friends, we were in seventh grade. You know, and even when we're talking and they meet some of my newer friends and we'll talk about a memory of something. Oh, do you remember at the, you know, eighth grade dance or something silly like that, right? But there's something that's so rich about that too, you know, of somebody that knew you when and you had some type of a root with somebody, you know, even as a memory that is just of everyday life. It didn't have to be a tragic memory for it to be meaningful, right? But it's so meaningful. And then, you know, some of my best friends from high school, same thing. Of they knew your, it's when somebody knows your personality of these different stages of your life, and they validate that, or they share who you were back then with the people in your life now. It helps, you know, it shows the connectivity. And it shows that there's this bond, you know, that's there, right? Through history and through shared experiences.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then you get to be a whole person.
Yes.
Right? Like yeah. You don't, yeah, it's like you can be yourself, like these fragmented parts of, I know of me too, like, and of you are actually coming together, you
yeah.
know, through
yeah.
these connections and experiences. So really amazing. Yeah. Can you also touch a bit on, use whatever words you want, but like spirituality, religion, higher power, higher wisdom, whatever, you know, name you choose, but something that maybe was also deep down, giving you guidance or inspiring you in some way, that connection.
Absolutely. Yeah. excuse me. I absolutely believe that in, you know, a entity that's bigger than you or I, right? And people call it different things, you know, God, higher power, or what, you know, whatnot, the universe. But I just think that I think that we are so complicatedly and beautifully and artistically made as human beings, that I just don't think that we just appear, right? And, so I think that for me, you know, growing up with, you know, introductions in whether it was Buddhism and Mormonism and Christianity to New Age, to all of these different elements, and have so many dear, dear people in my life that have different perspectives. But what I find in all of that is, there's a commonality that we're searching for something that that guides us, you know, inside. And so that has been kind of having some form of element of faith for me in some of my darkest days, I think has sustained me, right? And I think that was the element of hope. I could not always put my finger on it. I could not always give it a label or, you know, say what it is. But even in the turmoil, there was something at the end of the day, at the very bottom of that, there was a little bit of this peace that I just couldn't explain, right? And that I think that I know that I'm called to something that, you know, I think we all need to know that we matter and things that we hope in this lifetime that when we leave this planet, that we've left it better than when we came in, and that we leave some form of legacy. And, so I think that has helped me to kind of say, you know what, I'm designed for something. I'm designed for a certain purpose, you know, purposes. Mm. And even in my flaws and even in my story, that's all pretty intentional. Mm. And, now do things, you know, are things, bad things done to me? I don't believe that. I think that we all are able to function. We all have choices and whatnot. And, so I think that we all have the ability to choose, you know, how we respond to life circumstances. Mm. And I think that how we respond to it is what makes us, more loving or more hateful, right? Or stronger or weaker. And I think that's not always the outcome that we strive for. It's in this process of how do we work through, you know, these circumstances? How do we work through these hurts, these letdowns that, really grows us? And so it's in that process that I hold some thread of there's an element of faith that I want to lean on. And, you know, I'm always looking for guidance, you know, having time of meditation, quiet time, just even writing, out my thoughts, my prayers, my visions, my whatever, or I feel like things are being downloaded to me, taking those in, is so important. And going back to your question before, is that is a part of shaping me to be able to come where I come from and what I hold on to continue going forward.
Very powerful. Thank you for sharing that. And one last question I have is, what touches your heart? What touches your heart?
What touches my heart? Well, I'm, okay, I always get surprised when I say this. I cry like at the littlest things. I think, you know, there's a strong, you know, type A personality, but, inside, and, I'm not ashamed of that at all, is I think a very tender heart, that I've been able to allow to, be exposed. And so what touches me? I just would really, I mean, this sounds cliche and it sounds abstract, but really, genuine connection with people. Mm. And, I'm surrounded by, superficial conversations or quick conversations, you know, all day long, right? In masses and whatnot. But if somebody takes the time and really, wants to hear what's on my heart and what's on my mind or my perspective, and whether we agree or disagree, it doesn't matter. But if you sat and you listened to that, and also, you know, and vice versa, right? Allowing me into your world, allowing me into your heart, allowing me into your soul. I think just that is so, it just feeds my soul and feeds my heart. And I get really, really excited, you know, that, because I think we're in a very fast paced world right now. And I think the world is very divisive. And so I think that being able to just, turn up the silence in us and turn down the white noise, we're able to listen and to really dial into each other a little bit more. Mm. So I think that when people create that space, and allow for that, in that, allow me in, I allow them in that, yeah, that just, like, I get excited for that, you know, and just, appreciate that so much. And I just, my hope and my prayer, my wishes is that we can, those people, there's so many of us, because I know I encounter, all of you out there, is going beyond the encounter and taking that next step to engage, mm-hmm. right? And truly engaging. Mm-hmm. And that engagement doesn't, even if you, you know, you may not be best friends forever. I have found that somebody may just come across in our life, even for a 10-minute conversation. You may never see them again, but I think that they were there. They may have had a word or something that just really encouraged you, and or vice versa, right? So I think living life a little bit more awake and alert, because I think that this, the deep, true spirituality and outside of the religious format, outside of dogma, outside of whatever you want to call it, this, the true spirituality is that we are so, as human beings, we're designed to live life together and to be connected. You know, and we're not connected to everybody. We can't be everybody's friends, but there are people here that we are designed to connect to.
Beautiful. Yes. And I can definitely, we had this conversation before about the importance of not just connecting with people on the surface level, but truly dropping deeper than that, deeper than that surface layer, and really getting to know each other. And I think sometimes, yes, the connection happens immediately, and there's just that flow, you know, of communication and care between people. And sometimes, I know maybe for me, because I'm more of an introvert, it takes time, you know, to get to know somebody, to really open up. So I'm just kind of like exploring those edges for myself too. Like, when is it that I maybe shy away from a stranger, and I don't necessarily right away ask them these deep questions, you know, for fear of being seen as a weirdo. But, you know, so it's like,
probably the second time I talk to you, I'm like, tell me your story. As a total extrovert coming into an introvert, you're like, back off.
I believe I did share, though. I think I did. I did share, yeah, some of what's happening to me. But yeah, connection, and absolutely. I think our hearts need that. Otherwise, we can't really live meaningful lives. We can't really thrive. And yeah, it becomes very difficult. So
I have a question for you.
Absolutely, sure.
So it's a new year.
Yes.
Do you like one word, or do you do, and a lot of times people have, you know, New Year's resolutions and all these lofty goals and whatnot. I tend to do like just a one word, a word for that year. Mm-hmm. What do you do? Do you do like, do you have sets of goals, vision, resolutions? Do you do a one word vision? Mm-hmm.
It's interesting you ask that question. I used to do vision boards a while back, and then for some reason I just kind of dropped that idea. And I think because I wasn't manifesting what I was saying on those vision boards. So I just let them go. Then I started choosing words. My word for last year was actually ease.
Ease?
Believe it. Yes, it was ease. I just felt like I didn't want to be pushing. I didn't want to be necessarily working harder than I had to. And I wanted to experience more ease in my body. Like, I wanted to be in the flow. I was also connecting to a lot of the feminine values. And so I felt like that year and the focus of ease was really felt wonderful for me. So this year, like, I'm still contemplating what the word would be. So I'm kind of like sitting with it, playing with some possibilities. I was thinking maybe love would be one of the qualities. That's one of my values. And so, but then it feels like too broad. So I'm just kind of, I'm still playing with it. Yeah. The answer is I don't yet know what the word would be.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, love was my word last year.
Was it?
Yeah. And it, when I first wrote it down, it did feel a little bit abstract, right? But I really kind of sat with that. Why was that word kind of drawn to it? And in kind of doing a more focused on that word was finding areas that were blocked, you know, and allowing love to flow in to me and letting love flow out of me more freely. And so it was just allowing love to just really flow and embracing that, embracing the love of so many amazing people that I have, you know, established in my life that I continue to encounter, like you, right? And just approaching that and then allowing it to flow out of me too. So that's interesting that you said love. I think it was freely. It was kind of love and freely kind of seemed to work hand in hand for me. Last year. And this year on the play of the word love is powerful. Like I want to be a powerful lover. Not that way, but you know what I mean? But like to me, I look at, like Gandhi was a powerful lover. Martin Luther King was a powerful lover. Dorothy Day, you know, all of these people were, in their peace were so powerful. And just a love that, even just from a physical standpoint is just like, you know, hugging, like just, I want people, I want to just transfer it, you know? And not just speak it, but just really, just transfer it, whether it's in a hug, a handshake, a touch to, you know, listening to people. And, you know, I have people that reach out and, you know, a mentor or just they want to connect or whatever is transferring that to help them to kind of really discover their power, you know, and their hope and whether it's healing or not. I mean, you know, I'm no savior. I'm no doctor. I'm no nothing crazy. I'm just a simple human being, which a lot of these people who acted from love in such powerful ways became great, you know, icons in our time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. And it's that combination of love, power, and also standing for something that, for example, Gandhi believed was right.
Yes.
You know, like, and Martin Luther King, they knew what they were standing for is what actually, they were also standing for big, massive changes that humanity needed to, take on. And they weren't willing to, give up on that. So those, like holding on to that vision, I think also was really, really big, inspiring, I think, moment in the history that to this day, we feel like these people are giants, you know, and you know, you feel inspired by them as well, and so do I. And the fact that you feel, it's almost like in psychology, it's called positive projection, but you see that in them, and it's something you have in you as well. And so you want, it sounds like you want to amplify that in you so that we can create a more loving world, you know, even, and you already are doing that through your community and the coffee shop created and, you know, the way you're showing up in the world. So right on. Just keep doing that. That's all I can say.
Yeah. All of them are little corners so that we can make an impact. So
yeah, absolutely. Anything else you feel like you want to share before we wrap up for today?
No, I think we've shared a lot. I think, well, maybe kind of the last word is, I think is that, and I touched on it, but is I would encourage people, to try to live life aware and awakened, and more of just on a day-to-day basis, for instance, you know, at the coffee shop, and is when people come in, pay attention to those around you. And if somebody says something to you, you know, allow yourself to explore that a little bit, you know, I think there's a way of doing that, whether you're an introvert or extrovert, and doing it in a way that's comfortable for you and still, you know, having your boundaries and whatnot. I tell people, I have these crazy stories of these coincidences and these people I meet in different parts of the country, in different part of the world, and somehow they show up and they know somebody else in a different part of the world. And I just don't know that I'm that special. I just think the difference there is taking that time and seeing people in front of me. And I think that if we just see who's in front of us, see who they are beyond their voting decisions or their skin color or their gender or their gender preference, whatever that is, that each one of us has a soul and a heart that yearns to matter and yearns to be loved and yearns to be heard. And I think that we can be, you know, the the Gandhis, the Martin Luther Kings, the Buddhas, the Christ, you know, whoever it is in our lifetime and in our daily worlds, that we can have that love and we have that ability, that very powerful ability to see that in people and value them. And I think that that requires being a little bit vulnerable, right? And, but I think courage and vulnerability go hand in hand, right? As the very astute Brené Brown, I think, talks a lot about. So,
Absolutely.
So that's it.
That's it.
That's all I gotta say.
Thank you, Deb. Thank you. I really appreciate your time, you being here, your vulnerability and your openness. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for the time. All right.
Yeah.
Have a good day.